financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rahm.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rahm. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I'm doing good. What is our big topic today?
Well, I'm going to say it's financial wellness, but I want to talk about employers. And first, I just want to nail down that term, financial wellness. Okay. For one thing, if you know me, you can hear my voice. I'm fighting a throat thing. So when I'm talking about wellness, I know of what I speak at the moment. But financial wellness is a term that gets sort of bantied around, like financial planner. And there's all these generic terms that come out. And okay. I guess the downside of this is that people use them as tools to sell products and make money. And they say, hey, guess what? I'm going to help you get financially well, when really what they're doing is selling you an insurance product or an investment vehicle. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's part of financial wellness, is having those things in place. What I'm disagreeing with is the idea that it doesn't include, in most cases, things like actual budgeting. You know, here's an app, put your information in, is not the kind of help people need. They really need help, in my experience, with financial literacy and financial wellness as a package. So what's missing in these kinds of programs, most of them don't include any sort of real debt management. And if they do, they include like credit card stuff. You know, we've been over this many, many times. It's why we're patented, right? But what they're missing is the person, the human that helps you to be financially well, right?
So it sounds like it's a Band-Aid and not fixing the actual problem.
Well, it's a start. It's a start. Mm-hmm. What we've got. We have about twice as many companies now offering some sort of financial wellness package as part of their employer benefits or employee benefits, excuse me.
So do any include goats walking over your money? Like yoga? No.
Maybe, you know. Yeah, maybe a little acupuncture on your dollar bill.
Right.
About in 2015, according to Bank of America, we only had about 23 or 24% of the companies offering financial wellness benefits as part of your employee benefit plan. And today they say there's about 53%. Now, that was a survey that was done over 800 employers and 1,000 employees.
What does that mean exactly? Like, how do you know if you have financial wellness with your employer? Is it like a program? Is it a person? What is it?
Really good question, because you know what? It's whatever they decide to label it as right now. Some places say, look, we're going to give you financial wellness benefits. And it turns out to be something about retirement planning, or it turns out to be something about health insurance, but it may not be a full, well-rounded package. So your question is, how do you know if you have it? And the first thing is to ask your HR people, hey, does our company offer a financial wellness package? And then find out what it is. It seems to me that it either goes one way or the other. They've either thrown everything into there that they can think of, which is such a labyrinth of information that employees just look at it, freeze up, and don't find their way through it, right? Or it's stripped down and it really handles just whatever the agent or broker who sold them that package wanted it to handle. The reason for this, Jess, as you can imagine, is the heavy lifting isn't in selling you a life insurance policy or an annuity or a mutual fund. The heavy lifting in financial wellness is the educational piece. Mm-hmm. It's working with a person to figure out one-on-one or couple to one, you know, or whatever, where your illness is, essentially.
And is that a continuous thing or a one-time thing?
It could be either. Yeah, it's a continuous thing, but in my experience, it's on a curve, right? So initially, you need a lot of care, right? Somebody has to help identify what your problems are, give you the coaching and the tools that you need to start to sort through those problems and help you take them one at a time and give you the nudges that you need, the gentle nudge. Like, hey, Jess, you said that you were going to enter that information into our system. It's been 2 weeks. You asked me to follow up with you in a week. I'm not trying to nag you, but you asked me to help you. Tell me when is a good time for you to get this done. I understand life events happen. Maybe you want to push this out a month, but let me know so that we can help keep you on track and get you to your goal. That is not ever going to be, well, I shouldn't say not ever, with AI, who knows these days, but I don't think that's really very realistic in the immediate future to expect from some sort of software that lives in your HR portal that you're supposed to figure out on your own. Okay.
Right.
So if you need that human resource to diagnose your financial illness, as it were, a lot of metaphors here, but if you need that, then there's no replacement for a knowledgeable human, not somebody who, if they sold a certain amount of product, qualifies to be a coach. What is that? And I see that in these plans. Well, if you sell enough product, you're going to get to call yourself a coach. Right. So you can sell more product under a different guise. As I said, the heavy lifting really is about, you know, the budget, the debt management, the way you talk to your partner about debt or about money. How do you speak with your children? How do your kids take care of you if there's a long-term illness? Any of the things that really are obstacles for people, but that every company on the planet isn't in the game for.
Right.
Because it's the hard way to do it, right? But it's the important way to do it. What good does it do to sell people more products that they maybe can or can't afford without knowing they can or can't afford them? And I mean, I've been doing this for a long time now. Let's see, 37, 38 years, something like that. And every form I've seen from insurance companies that is supposed to be a fact finder, right, or investment companies, they ask a lot of questions, a lot of really important questions, but they ask things that bring you to a certain point, whether it's good or bad, whether they're trying to rule you out, like this product isn't appropriate for you, or they're trying to get you in, this is the best product for you. They do it by means of deduction. And that those questions sound a lot like this, Jess. They sound a lot like, tell me how much you spend monthly. And they rely on your data to get it. But there's no tool necessarily to figure that out.
And so you're just kind of guesstimating.
Yeah, most of the time. Or you're using an app that, you know, puts things together and doesn't necessarily sort them through. Mm-hmm. Computers are great. They speed our processes up. AI is doing a lot of the intake that humans used to do already. I'm not sure I love that because we lose jobs, right? But it can do some of the heavy lifting like that. But it isn't a human. And I hope it's never a human. I hope that we never get rid of the need for actual people who listen and ask questions and help you through the process. So the reason I'm talking about this with employers is if only 53% of the employers in the country are offering some sort of wellness package, and if most of those packages seem to be falling short of the mark as statistics and just conversation with people tell us, they either don't know whether the company has an employee package or not, or they can't understand it when they get there, or it isn't useful to them, right? If that's the case, then that means there's still 47%, roughly half of the companies that are not addressing this.
Is this a recent thing, though? Because I can't think of a job that ever, when I was sitting down as part of the interview or when I got my new employee information, that I saw something that said financial wellness package. I don't remember ever getting that.
That's right. That's right. Because it's, I wouldn't say a loss leader because they would tell you up front, hey, we're going to give you this package. It's more of a warm and fuzzy when somebody asks about it. So
okay,
it's not new. That survey that Bank of America did compared the number of companies from 2015 to today.
Okay, so it's been around.
That's nine years ago. And that's about the time, if you recall, we started financial fitness. We started using that term financial fitness and financial coaching. And I'm not going to say people heard us and picked it up, right? But we were on the cutting edge of that because we thought it was descriptive. But by the time everybody says they're a financial coach and there's no way to know what they know or don't know, you know, you really have to be your own best advocate to understand what that person can do for you. So no, it's not new, but in terms of not ever sitting down for a job, and I think it's fair to say, because you've said it on the show, in radio, there's a lot of changeover, and you've stayed continuously employed, but you've moved from station to station, and every time you get a new package, right? And is financial wellness in there? No. In fact, one of the reasons I'm talking about it is that companies are constantly complaining that they are pressed to pay you more money, not you personally, but to pay employees more money, because employees are saying, look, the cost of living has gone up. I can't pay my bills. I just bought a car. I just bought a house, whatever. And they're expecting their salary to, you know, to cover that. And so employers are constantly getting bombarded with those questions, like, how can I get more money from you? How can you give me more value by employing me? And if you cannot, I'm going to seek other employment. I'm going to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
In fact, there's an estimate. I think it was Salary Finance, Americans by Salary Finance. Salary Finance did a survey, and they estimate that $500 billion are being lost annually by companies to employees who are under stress, not showing up for work, presenteeism is where you are at work, but your mind is somewhere else, right?
Right. Your
body is there, but your mind is on, I got a creditor calling me. What am I going to do about that?
There's a whole show on this called Severance. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
It's kind of like that. It's somehow they manage to separate you. So when you're at work, you can't think about home. When you're at home, you can't think about work. It's a cool show.
Well, that's
totally that idea. Yeah.
That's interesting. We started talking about that with cell phones alone, right? How many interruptions do you get from your cell phone, and how many employers were requiring that they were off during your work? And then there was a whole personal thing about that. Who knows where that was
headed. Quick question before you had to break. Is this something like short-term disability where if your company offers it, you can opt in, but you have to pay for it? Or is this just like a warm and fuzzy benefit they're giving you?
It
or
could
is it
be
different at each?
It could be either.
Okay.
I would vote for it to be, you know, a free benefit because it's so valuable. And we should talk about the value and things when we come back from break. But yeah, it could be either. Some employers will pick up part of the cost. Some will pick up all of the cost. Some will say, look, it's available if you want to pay for it.
And do you think if it is available, it's worth doing it? Or is that case by case basis?
It depends on the financial wellness package. I mean, is it worth paying for it? Even short term disability, we say that. So you have short term disability. Do you really know what you're paying for? Is it, hey, I have to lose an eye, an arm, a leg to be covered? Or is it, I have to be able to just not do my own job for you know, a period of time? I mean, know what you're paying for. And in financial wellness, it's new enough that it's being sold as a package. Companies are making money on it, but I'm not sure the end users are getting the benefit from it. And therefore, the employers aren't getting the benefit from it.
All right. We'll have more on this coming up. But first, I want to get your phone number.
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
Or you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be right back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is sponsored by Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented. Financial coaching and more information at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
I'm still here, Jess.
I'm finding this topic interesting because I really have never heard of this from an employer before today.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, 401k, obviously, and maybe there's an HR person you can call if you need help on something, but not an actual financial wellness package.
Well, that's fascinating because, as you know, I do some segments on other radio stations, and one of the DJs had no idea what I was talking about either. And the other DJ said, maybe we have it and I just haven't heard about it. Maybe I should go look, you know, how do I find out? That's really powerful. You work for a large corporation. I mean, you're in a smallish radio station, but you work for a very large corporation. So this is a good time for me. And we should remind people about this at the end, but this is the right time for me to say, if you're an employee or an employer and you're listening to this show, contact me, because really we could give you and your employees, you know, great access to the real benefits that they need to help limit the absenteeism, the presenteeism, right? But you're at work, but your mind is somewhere else, or the stress level that your employees are under. And this is perceived as a very, very valuable, as you can imagine, right? It's a very valuable benefit, not just to say, hey, look, you got this warm and fuzzy financial wellness package, but it's quantifiable with us. I mean, the moment they fill out that form and they click submit, it shows them this is how much money you're going to save doing this without spending any extra money monthly. So for a small fee, the employers could probably all afford to pick this up. It's a small fee. Or even people would pay for it because, I mean, they're paying for it now when they're not in an employer plan, right? But for a small fee, they could have access to real coaching, group meetings, you know, really keeping people on track. And the things that the employers get out of it are huge because, first of all, an employee that doesn't need to ask you for more money all the time because they can't afford to pay their bills is valuable, right? Just that alone. Or that you give a raise to, but that raise goes like directly into their retirement account because the rest of their stuff has been handled. Their budget is in check and their bills are on track. And so now they see the real value in that. Try and pull an employee away from a company that is helping them fix their lives financially by doing something more than just saying, here's some more money. The problem isn't the amount of money that people have. Of course, that's a problem, right? You might not have enough money, but why don't you have enough money? Because the symptoms of that are eating you alive, right? The fact that you've been approved for loans, or that you've had life events happen that are expensive, or that now your kids are college age, or you're caring for an ill parent, those kinds of things are sucking up your income. And if you think that the only route or the best route is to go to your employer and say, I need more from you, there is a point where the employer cannot give more or doesn't want to give more. And we see this in turnover, Jess, because they fire experienced people, right? They find a way to get the experienced people to leave and they hire somebody new at a lower
or a lot less money. Yeah. I see it all the time.
Yeah. And I would prefer that we are valuing experience and that we are caring for the new people that come in and that we're getting them on the right track financially, because after all, the job is just the income part. It isn't any of the rest of the life financial markers, right? So a company that actually would bother to do this should really impress their employees.
Well, and in addition to what you said in the first half was it's a $500 billion loss because they're not addressing this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we don't have to tell employers that. They must know how much money they lose. What they don't know is how to fix that part necessarily. Mm-hmm. And here's the worst thing you can do as an employer, I think. You tell all your employees, hey, you got this great financial wellness package, but you don't make them financially well. You don't give them the tools and the help they need to feel it. All you're doing then is lip service. And then it's even worse. We gave you a financial wellness package. What do you want from us?
Mm-hmm.
I want to be financially well. I want to feel like my company cares about me. I want to not worry if I have to buy a car that I don't have any way to forecast that.
Right.
So, I mean, I want to feel like when I go to work, I get more than a paycheck. And because of that, I'm willing to give more than the typical employee who just goes to work and gets a paycheck, puts their hours in.
Yeah, that is so true, because a lot of people just feel like a number, you know?
Why wouldn't you? You know, there's a local grocery store that has a big sign up that says employee owned. And I remember when that happened, right? So that store, you get really good service in it because it is, in fact, employee owned, right? Mm-hmm. So those things matter, and especially large corporations, which have the label of being, you know, insensitive or not caring about their employees, where you are just a number, right? Well, numbers matter, but they matter when you're helping people with their finances. So when I'm talking about a really great financial wellness package, of course, I'm talking about something like we're working with Hug Your Money, because obviously we're patented for a reason. We do help people with budgeting. It's an automated system where they can plug their information in, but then there's a coach to help them. Right. Mm-hmm. We do help them with debt management. And if you've never heard me talk about the debt management side of this, it isn't here's a consolidation loan or here's a negotiated rate with your credit card companies. It's everything, anything that could be paid in full. I don't care if you owe your brother-in-law, the IRS, your mortgage, your credit cards, your car loans, anything that can be paid in full, can be accelerated using our system without increasing your monthly outlay. And that's key, because now an employer can say, look, if you take advantage of this program, you know, have a meeting with a coach, group meeting, whatever, and look at your numbers, you're going to save 8, 10, 12, 20 years off your mortgage.
And it's great because it's, if you like instant gratification, because as soon as you see that number way smaller than what it was, you get a little hit of that.
Yeah. And think about it as an employer. So when people fill out their form at the website and they click submit, they see that number right away. And most often they don't even believe it, but it is accurate. I mean, you can proof it out in the math, right? It'll say, look, you know, you're scheduled to pay back your debt in the next 25 years, and we can help you pay it off in, let's say, 10. So we're going to save you 15 years of payments. And that amount of money is X, right? And of this $300,000 we're saving you, $175,000 of it is interest, right? We break it right down so you can see it. You can proof the math out yourself. Now, if you're an employer and you can get employees as a group to that place in less than an hour's time, they then see, oh my gosh, the value in being employed by this company where I have this as a benefit, which hopefully the company is paying for, is like I just got a $300,000 raise over the next 10 years. And by the way, now that I'm out of debt 10 years from now, and they've helped me with my budget and my retirement planning, and they've worked with my, you know, put my 401k in with all the rest of my investments, and I can see what my forecasted retirement looks like. Now, at the end of 10 years, when I'm out of debt, or 8 years, or whatever the timeline is, some people are even shorter, 3-4 years, all of my money that I was sending to creditors can go into this retirement plan. It's just an enormous idea that I think if employers understood it better, and it's not up to the employers to go figure it out, right? Companies should be able to produce this, but they can't. They don't, right? It's part of why we have the product we have. So they may be producing part of it, but not the what I think is the most important part, which is the actual implementing of the wellness program. What good does it do to look up your illness on the web and say, oh, I've identified what I have this, and I need that prescription, if you can't get that prescription?
Right.
You need the doctor in the middle. You need a person who knows how to do this. And today we can do it all very easily through group meetings in virtual. I mean, I have a throat thing today and I'm in a meeting with you, and you're in Northampton and I'm in Turner's Falls, Massachusetts, right? It's easy to do this with group meetings today for employers and employees. And it's very warmly received when the employees understand this is incredible. What's I never had access to these tools or a coach like this ever before. And now I can see my company's doing it for me because they actually care about me.
And good managers know that that's the kind of stuff that breeds loyalty. When you're actually looking out for them, people will want to stay and work harder and do more.
There's no doubt. I mean, we were talking about young people coming into work, and, you know, millennials are saddled with this student loan debt. So are people in pretty much every generation these days. But they've got the student loan debt, and they're walking around saying, I want to work for less money because I'm hoping my loans are going to get forgiven. And if I make too much money, they won't get forgiven. And I'm not sure if that's going to happen. The stress they're under is unbelievable. Or they say, I need to make a lot of money because I have these student loans. And yeah, they're in deferment right now, but they're coming home to roost in 6 months or a year. And I'm going to have to pay that. How am I going to do that? Right. Well, a debt program that's part of a financial wellness package that does what we do with student loans, which almost nobody does, right? I could say nobody, but I mean, just because we have a patent doesn't mean there's not somebody out there doing what we do, but we haven't found them yet. and, you know, that's a way for them to feel more comfortable. The rising healthcare costs are squeezing employers all the time. Employers are paying less and less of the healthcare benefit, and you're having to pay more and more out of your paycheck. How about financial wellness that talks about that? How about talking about the aging population that is, you know, maybe going into a facility, or you want to keep out of a facility? How can you afford to do that? As long as we're keeping people under our thumbs with too many loans and high debt to income ratios and no skills about budgeting or real retirement planning other than what the financial person tells them, as long as we're telling people what to do and we're not teaching people what to do, this problem won't get better. It's about education. It's about education. And employers are in a great position to make this happen. So, you know, even if you're an employee, this is a perfect time to say, give us a call and say, hey, my employer doesn't offer that. Here's who I think you should talk to. And we'll talk to them and hopefully make that work. And everybody benefits from that. Yeah.
And I think even this conversation will prompt probably a lot of people to go ask, do we even have one? You know, what do we have here? Do you offer anything? Because maybe your employer does and you had no idea.
Yeah, that's where it's difficult for me to come on the air and talk about this because, yes, I like to bring this stuff to light. But if you go to your employer and say, do we have a financial wellness package? And they say, oh, yeah, here it is. Then you need to see if it's really providing you with everything you need to be financially well, or is it a suite of pieces of software that you get to try to use? Or is
on
it,
your own and yeah, you're never going to use.
Yeah, or is it a connection hiding under the guise of financial wellness that is really, here's our 401k person who comes in and talks to you about whether you need life insurance? You know, in order for financial wellness to be financial wellness, it needs to be all encompassing. It needs to start with some sort of a budget or a handle on expenses. And these things can be done simultaneously, right? It needs to include your real debt picture, not just your credit cards, your student loans, your car loans, and what will happen in the future, your mortgage, your home equity line. It needs to include that. That's a lot of money going out every month, and people just ignore it like it didn't matter. I don't get it. And of course, it needs to include savings, retirement planning, savings for emergency cash reserves, future goals, whether you're going to help support your kids or not, whether they're going to help support you. What are you doing for estate planning? Do you need a trust? Do you need a will? How can you get around things? That is about financial wellness. It is a broad area.
Plus, your software has a place too for the fun stuff, right?
The fun stuff? Yeah.
Well, we talked before about how you like to plan for a vacation, not what if, when.
The fun stuff.
Vacation stuff. Yeah.
The fun stuff is the part of being well that you enjoy. You enjoy your health, right? You enjoy your financial health. Yes, you do a little work to get there, right? You get your butt on a treadmill or whatever. You do that part to get there. Nobody loves that part, but you do it when you see positive results. Mm-hmm. And the positive results are they pop their head up early, anywhere between an hour and a month, month and a half. And bingo, you start to see, oh, I get it. This is what I can do. So you bet. In fact, I got a text the other day from these people in Florida, again, saying we couldn't have done it without you. You know, here's where we've paid everything off except our mortgage and we're throwing $1,600 extra a month at it. And we're saving this money on the side and life is good. And we're never going back. You know, we're never going back to the old way of doing things. And it's just I got the
I show. Love that. Yeah. Yeah.
We get these all the time where people are saying, wow, I can't believe I'm down to just this debt, or I can't believe I was able to retire. I can't believe that now I have enough money coming in that I can actually put money aside for a vacation fund. Or I bought a car and I, you know, paid it off in 3 years.
That's a great feeling.
Very rewarding. Yeah.
Well, if there's an employer listening today or an employee that wants to check in on this, but I'm thinking really for employers, like if you're listening to this thinking this sounds really good, what's the number they can get a hold of you at?
Sure. They can reach us at 413-773-3333 or of course on the web at hugyourmoney.com.
Thank you so much. This was fun, actually. I didn't know about this at all. So it was a fun day today.
I'll be talking to your employer. We'll see if we can make this more fun for you.
We'll have another episode of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, coming up next week right here on WHMP.
Would you like to see your business on Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor? We offer a 15-year proven track record. We have limited openings, but are currently seeking sponsors and guests. Is your business a good fit? We'd like to start a conversation. Contact us today at 413-773-3333 or info@hugyourmoney.com.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Hi, it's Francis. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the money doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Hi, Jess. Welcome back. How are you?
I know. I've been taking kind of a day off here or there, but I noticed that every time I take a day off, by the way, I blow a ton of money. So I probably need financial advice next time before I take the day off.
No, I don't think there's anything wrong with taking a day off and spending some money as long as you can afford it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah, I notice when I take a day off, I pay for it when I come back. And that's the story of self-employed people. But still, it has to be done every now and then. Today, I wanted to talk about a way to leverage your money that people, you know, it's not really the first thing you think of when you think of, hey, how can I leverage my money? That usually points to some sort of risk, right? Risk and leverage. You know, I'm going to buy real estate and I'm going to trade one property up for the next and I'm going to keep doing it. And so people will say, well, you're highly leveraged. And they assimilate that as a risk. But in fact, this is quite, it's an incredibly safe way to do it. And okay. I'm not talking about it specifically as an investment, but I led off with that because I want people to hear that message, that this is a way for you to leverage your money. This is a way for you to create generational wealth for not-
Okay, by leverage your money, you mean, what do you mean by leverage your money?
Turn a dollar into $1,000.
Oh, like that.
Like that. Okay.
Yeah.
But here's the kicker. You're not going to feel it probably. In some cases, you will be the one who reaps the rewards. But in other cases, it will be the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
So I'm talking about a way to create generational wealth when you think you can't afford it, maybe, or to protect your assets when you're well off and think, well, I'm just going to leave all my money to my kids. Who cares? They'll spend it. I don't care. You should be thinking about a way to protect your assets and leverage that and grow that into a much larger pot of money for not much money.
Okay, that sounds good.
Doesn't it? All right, now,
yeah.
Here's where you hear the needle scratch across the record. Like, it's life insurance.
It's life insurance, life insurance, okay.
Now, I don't talk about life insurance very often because even though I'm licensed to sell life insurance, and we write some policies every now and then for people that want them or need them, you know, clients. But I've not been a person who's been beating the drum about, you need to buy life insurance from me because I'm not selling you life insurance. What I'm talking about is a way for you to make your finances better for you and your family. Okay. So the first thing you think about when you think about life insurance is what?
Dying.
Dying. I mean, who wants to talk about this, right? We're all going to do it. None of us want to, and we're not in control of it usually. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're talking about something that has an emotional barrier to getting over a hurdle, this is one of them. Long-term care insurance is another. No one wants to think about being in a facility for the rest of their life. But the reality is many people will. A bigger reality is we're all going to die. Every one of us, no matter what we think, we will end our trek here on life by dying. The question, what are you going to do about that? What pieces can you control of that? And without getting into the whole emotional part of it, one of the things you can control is what happens after you're gone for your family, your charities, your partner in business, whatever, your cat, your dog, you can control some of this. And the way you do it, well, is through certain kinds of life insurance. Now, we can go through a lot of details about what kinds of life insurance there are and how you decide how much you're going to need and what you do with it. But at the core, what I want people to realize is that life insurance is a cheap way to generate more money. Okay.
Okay.
You might be generating it for yourself in the future as a stream of income, which could be tax-free, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
You might be generating it to leave behind to someone else.
But okay.
So many people ask me about this. They ask me about, well, I need a trust because I have this kid that, you know, I have two kids. One kid is really great with money and the other child is, they're going to blow everything in a heartbeat.
Right, yeah. So and you hear about that all the time.
Yeah, so I really want protection. I want to have a trust. Well, maybe they have so much money that they need a trust to get around some tax issues, and maybe they don't. If they don't, well, even if they do, I guess, but if they don't, the expense of managing a trust and the layers of putting a trust in place may or may not be in their best interest. And that's a question for an attorney. But one thing they could do through life insurance is they can, I hate to say this phrase, but in some way they can sort of moderately control their money from the grave, a thing that we cannot do, right? We're always told, you can't do it. Once you're gone, they're going to do whatever they
right.
want. Yeah. Well, okay, so here's one little tidbit. You could have something on your life insurance called a restrictive beneficiary form.
Okay.
And that says how the person will receive the money. Now, there are limitations on it. Usually it's over a 5-year period or whatever. But instead of leaving your child, you know, $1 million instantly that they're going to buy a Lamborghini with or whatever, you could say, no, they're going to get it as a stream of income over 5 years. And the life insurance company, I always tell you these little known facts, right? When have you ever heard about restrictive beneficiary forms, right? But the life insurance company will administer that because it's
okay.
So one of the things you need to know about life insurance is that the death benefit is almost always a guaranteed thing. Now, there are variable life policies and universal life policies and variable universal life policies.
Yeah, it gets confusing.
Policies and term policies. And, you know, we could go on and on about the different kinds of policies there are. There are almost as many policies as you can think of.
Mm-hmm.
But for most of them, the core principle is death benefit. So when you're buying a life insurance policy, you're saying, here's X number of dollars. I want to buy this death benefit. Now, there will be, you know, probably a physical or some medical records, you know, that have been gotten from the MIB, the Medical Information Bureau, or, you know, or you may or may not qualify for that, or you may just be rated. So sometimes a lot of people will say, well, I'm diabetic. I don't know if I can get life insurance. Yes, you can probably get life insurance depending on the underwriter, right? Which company is offering it, based on your health. And so they might charge you a little more for your premium is what you pay for it monthly or annually, right? They might charge you a little bit more for your premium to offset their risk because of your health. But
okay.
that doesn't
that makes sense.
Get it. Right. There are even situations where you are, quote, uninsurable and you can still get a guaranteed issue policy, which we can talk about. Okay.
Okay.
So that core principle is providing a death benefit. Now, what that death benefit does is where it gets tricky. Okay. For instance, in term insurance, now let's talk about why it's so confusing for people when we say, oh, it's term insurance. And they say, oh, no, I think I have cash value in that. You don't. If it's term insurance, you don't have cash value in it. Term is called term because it only lasts for a specific term. So you might have a 10-year term policy or a 20-year term policy or a 30-year term policy. But at the end of that term, something major happens to that insurance. It could be that it just goes away completely. Or it could be that it is what we call guaranteed convertible. Again, these terms are tough, but guaranteed.
Is that guaranteed convertible to whole life insurance?
Yeah, to some form of life insurance that might be more permanent. Okay. So at the big umbrella, we have term and whole life, right? Term is the stuff that you don't pay very much money for, but it disappears at the end of the term. Whole life is somehow more expensive, but is more permanent. Now, under both of those umbrellas, there are, you know, a multitude of layers. For instance, under whole life, you know, that universal life, variable life, all those things, they're all some form of whole life policy, which is a term for, I hate to use the term, it's a name for a permanent policy.
Okay.
So permanent versus temporary. T for term, T for temporary. P for permanent. Okay.
Oh, so, that's a good way to remember it. Yeah.
T for temporary. Okay. There's nothing wrong with either of these kinds of policies if they're the right one for you. If they're not the right kind for you, then you're going to be sorry that you bought them at some point in the future. Here's an example. You buy a term policy and you say, this is great because by the time this term runs out, my kids will be grown. And the kids are grown, but you've layered on a pile of debt. and you know, your wife or husband has stopped working and doesn't have any income, and you now have no life insurance, you're going to be sorry that you didn't buy something more permanent to cover those. Or the other way around, you bought something permanent, you threw a ton of money into it, you said, I'm going to do this as some major retirement vehicle, and I'm going to save money in here tax-free. And it turns out that you never needed it at all. You know, you ended up with no debt, you prepaid your funeral expenses, you don't have children to leave it to, whatever. And you've sort of overpaid for that unless you choose to leave that money to a charity, for instance. Okay. So I'm bouncing around a little bit here, but I want people to just recognize, I'm going to talk about the power of banding briefly before we go to break.
Okay.
So the power of banding, when you're talking about life insurance, whether it's term or whole life, any kind of life insurance, companies give you a discount for banding. It's like wrapping your bills in $1,000 bills or $2,000 piles or $5,000 piles, right? When you take them to the bank, it's a lot faster to turn them in than if they have to start counting out your pennies, okay? So insurance companies band life insurance. So if you buy $0 to $25,000, it might be X number. It might be, let's say, $1 a thousand, just to use a figure, right? And then if you buy from $26,000 to $35,000, it might be 88 cents a thousand. Right. So the more you buy, the cheaper it gets.
The cheaper it's going to be. Yeah.
In fact, here's one little known thing that I'll tell you. If somebody, let's say a life insurance agent comes to you and says, so Jess, how much can you afford monthly? What do you want to spend monthly? Oh, I could go on for an hour about why that's the wrong question. But
that's what car dealers do, too, by the way.
So when they say to you, what can you afford monthly? And you say $50, and they say that buys a $100,482.58 policy. Your answer should be either, I don't want to do it that way, or at the very least, I only want $100,000. Because for that odd number, you're paying a different amount.
Okay.
Right? Because of the banding. Okay. So if you know about banding, then you know that a $25,000 policy might cost you $50 a month, but a $250,000 policy will not cost you $500 a month, even though it's 10 times as much.
So you might be able to find that sweet spot where you're getting the rate that you want, but you're getting a little bit more.
You bet. And so we'll talk in the second half about how to decide how much money you need in life insurance and whether you need it or not. But just so that you have some idea at the beginning here of what you might be able to use to create generational wealth for your loved ones or your charity on a tax-free basis.
I want to get your phone number first.
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
Or you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be right back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is sponsored by Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented. Financial coaching and more information at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Hi, Jess. You stuck with me through the whole dying thing and everything?
I did. Well, we're talking leveraging money, not life insurance. So I like that.
Yeah. So a lot of salespeople will try and spin it for you and say, this is really your investment vehicle. Let me start by saying it could be an investment vehicle. And for anybody who's really interested in that or wants me to take a look at what they've got already and give them an opinion as to what I think it is, I'm happy to do that. But in my experience, it usually takes a lot of money to make it a good investment vehicle, or you need to be very young.
Okay.
So when I see people who say, well, I'm putting $5,000 a year into my life insurance because it's my retirement fund, I wince a little and want to look at the policy. When they say I'm putting, you know, $200,000 a year into it, they might be funding that heavily enough, if they have the time to make it work, to end up building an enormous tax-free pot of money that they can take out or they can leave to their heirs or whatever. But you just have to be careful that it's not a sales pitch, that you're looking at the math and you really see it on paper.
You just said something about either your one of two things, which one was extremely young. What is the best time to start thinking about buying life insurance? I think probably most people in their 20s and 30s don't think about it at all, or maybe they do. But when is a good time? When should you start thinking about it?
You know, the earlier you think of it, the better.
Mm-hmm.
In the old days, when we used to walk uphill and back, you know, both ways
In
to
the snow.
school uphill, right?
Yeah.
Like, in the old days, people used to buy policies for their children, and some still do. And that can be an incredible gift. You pay almost nothing for it. And you put, you know, let's say $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 on a kid's life. And, you know, it gets paid off. Like, it's probably a permanent insurance policy, not term. And it gets paid off in full, and it just sits there and builds cash value. And maybe the child doesn't even know about it. And someday in the future, you know, they're getting married, or they're buying a car, or they're looking for a down payment on a house. And lo and behold, there's a few thousand dollars in there, you know, sometimes much more than that. In some cases, I've seen it where the cash value exceeds the death benefit. And I have to say to people, wait, wait, wait. If you die, they're going to pay the death benefit, not the death benefit plus the cash value. So you want to take this cash value out now. And, you know, so let's, while we're on that topic, let's talk about how you get the money out of life insurance, because you can cause yourself a real headache when you do this wrong.
Okay.
So I'm talking about the money being tax-free inside, say, a permanent type of life insurance, right? One that builds cash value. So you have your death benefit, let's say $100,000. Maybe you have cash value of $25,000 in there, and you want to take some money out. Okay. If you withdraw the money and cancel the insurance, if you let the insurance lapse, you no longer have a death benefit, and the money you took out becomes a taxable event.
Oh, you don't want that to happen.
You really don't want to do it that way if you can help it. What you want to do instead is to borrow the money out of your life insurance, at least pay the interest back every year so that the loan just stays level, right? So you get an interest bill, you're paying yourself back, right? You're paying the interest on it. But you're keeping that loan level, because if, let's use that scenario, you have a $100,000 policy, you have a $25,000 cash value in it. Let's say you decide to take out 20 grand. You take 20 grand out and you die tomorrow, they're going to pay the $100,000 less the 20,000 that you took out, right?
Okay, so you're down to 80.
What you're doing is borrowing your own death benefit. It's that simple. You've got death benefit. They'd say, this is how much of it you can borrow. You're borrowing your own death benefit. But if you, the law says you never have to pay it back. So that word borrow is a little deceiving. You don't have to pay it back, but it will accrue interest. And if you don't at least keep the interest at bay, that loan will grow until such a time that it eats up all of the cash value.
Right. Yeah.
And either you have to continue to pay a premium that goes up, or you will have your policy lapse, thereby creating this taxable event for the money you took out. So the smartest way to do it is to keep paying your premiums, borrow the money out, and at least pay the interest on it every year, so that you just borrowed some of your own death benefit. Simple, easy.
Is it like a 401k though, where you have to have a specific life events in order to borrow, or can you borrow for any reason you want?
Great question. Yeah, it's yours. It's your death benefit. You're borrowing anytime you want, for as much as you want, up to the level they'll let you borrow. And it continues to grow. So the way that permanent insurance grows cash value, it's different from policy to policy. But in general, what happens is the amount of death benefit that you buy then can, it doesn't always have to, but it can generate cash value within that contract. So think of it like interest on your savings account. The more money you put into savings, the more interest you make, that's available to you, right? Now, in a plain vanilla whole life policy, so not to get into the weeds on these sort of mongrel kinds of policies, which actually turn out to be a lot better usually than a plain vanilla whole life policy.
Sorry, I just had a sneeze.
Bless
okay,
you.
I'll cut that out.
Bless you. That's okay. You know, so rather than talk about those kinds of policies, let's talk about a plain vanilla whole life policy, which I almost never see anymore and definitely don't approve of as a first run thing, because it's the most expensive form of whole life you can buy, right? Most expensive form of permanent life. But to make it very simple, that policy generates a dividend, like a stock would generate a dividend, right? Only it's not a life insurance policy. So it generates a dividend. And there are several options that you can choose for that dividend. One of them is you can have it build up cash value. Another is that you can have it buy little bits of paid up insurance. So your $100,000 policy generates a $10 dividend, which buys $100 worth of coverage. And now you have $100,100 of coverage. And it continues.
And that adds up.
over and over again. And that, in fact, can generate more cash value, interestingly enough. Another thing you can do that people don't talk about, and often we use this when people come to me and they say, we're trying to cut corners and we're paying $200 a month for this life insurance and we're thinking of canceling it. And I say, oh my gosh, you have a $250,000 policy here. You're going to cancel it for $200 a month. Do you know how many $200 a month payments you have to make to break even on your $200,000 policy? No, don't cancel it. Do this instead. And right, what this is we might change a dividend option on it to pay the premium. So if the policy is generating enough in dividends to pay part or all of the premium, you can simply do that. And the policy remain in force. The dividend will pay the premium. They'll send you statements. Just make sure it's in good health. So
that's Yeah, that's a great idea. Even if it cuts down on the payment a little bit, that helps.
Yeah. And the fourth thing typically, and again, some policies have different things, but the fourth thing typically that you can do with that dividend is you can say, send me a check. So if money's tight and your life insurance policy is generating a dividend, you could say, I want them to send me that $200 dividend every month or whatever it is. And your policy will stay in force and all of that. So the main point here is you can talk to your life insurance agent or you can talk to us, of course, about these details. What really know what your life insurance is. Don't think of it just like, well, it's just death benefit. And when I die, my kids get it. And I got to make sure the beneficiary's up to date. You know, really think about that. So, you know, you can have, you can use this for several ways. One way to use it is to preserve your assets. Look, I have a lot of money, or I have a house, or I have this situation where I'm going to leave my kids or my heirs pretty well off. Well, you can just do that. You can just let them fight over the money when you're gone, and you can do it that way. Or you could say, I want to put some life insurance on myself to free that money up for other uses. So what they're going to get is my death benefit when I die. Now, this can become particularly important in certain scenarios. One would be your partner in a business, and if you die, where is your partner? Can they, you know, have they lost half the clients? Do they have double the expenses? Can they replace you? What is that like? And so oftentimes partners will buy life insurance on each other as key man policies or partnership policies to cover the other person. And that sometimes is just a term policy until retirement date, right?
And those policies will pay out if you die. You don't have to wait like a will and probate, right?
That's right. They avoid probate. Boy, you're really learning this stuff, Jess.
I'm learning from you.
Yes. Well, you're doing great. Yes, they avoid probate. So that money goes to your beneficiaries right away. Okay, so another place where this is really important, and I see this one often, somebody's got a lot of real estate or even just one house, but they want to leave it to their heirs, but they still have a mortgage on it. They still have taxes. They still have insurance. And maybe their kids don't have the money to cover that. And it's going to take 6 months, 8 months, a year to get through probate. What are you going to do about it? Well, you know what? That life insurance or an annuity could fund that. It could give them the money they need right away to make repairs on the property, to pay the mortgage, to pay the taxes and insurance, so they aren't forced into a fire sale situation, particularly at a time when they're least well-equipped to do it, when they're emotionally distraught over losing a loved one. So there are, I think life insurance gets a bad rap. Even in my mind, I'm like, oh, I'm going to talk about life insurance. You know, somehow it's become a, and I'm going to lay the blame at agents' doorsteps here. Somehow it's become a tool to sell people stuff rather than you should have in your portfolio. And so the reason I'm giving this sort of broad overview today on life insurance, you notice I haven't even mentioned like burial costs or anything, right? Is because I want people to think of it more broadly. So I promised to talk about how do you decide how much life insurance you need, because it's the number one question people ask. Well, how much do I need? I can afford this much. How do I get that much on what I can? Whatever. Okay. The way I recommend that you think about it is first you think about, okay, how much is it going to cost for my funeral? All right. Then do I have any income I need to replace? Am I leaving a partner that can't pay the bills if my income isn't there? How do I provide income for them and for how long? Maybe they're going to need 2 years to get on their feet. Maybe they're going to need 5 years. Maybe they need it forever. Right. Start to replace that income and you can back out your expenses. Geez, they won't have my car payment if I'm gone. Right. And so you add that in. Then you start to think about education. What about getting my kids to college? If I die prematurely, how do I fund that? Can I do it with life insurance? And you start to add those things that are important to you. And at the end are things like, you know, charity, I hate to say it's at the end because for some people it's at the beginning, but you know, you add in charity, you add in other kinds of expenses that you think you might want covered in your life insurance. And then anything over that is gravy. You know, you get to the point where you say, okay, I've identified a need, a phrase that salespeople love to use. I've identified a need for, you know, $500,000 worth of coverage. But it turns out I can buy $1 million worth of coverage. And in fact, that's going to generate a tax-free income for me at retirement. So I'm going to choose to do that. And then I'm going to borrow, you know, 400,000 of that money or 500,000 of it. And I'm still going to leave the rest of it to my heirs. Right?
Yeah.
So it's really an important tool to think about. And I hope that people got enough from this show because it could be a 7-hour class and we would still never get through life insurance.
Yeah.
People got enough from this show to understand that this is in fact an important estate planning tool, not, you know, not something you get in the mail and go, oh, I checked the box. I got 25 grand. That'll pay to bury me. If that's all you need, that's fine. But there are better ways to do it, I think. And having a real discussion with a pro who you don't feel is selling you a product or asking you, so how much can you afford, Jess? You know,
right.
Somebody who's really doing the work, who starts to talk to you about the kinds of things you've heard in this show, right? Somebody who's really doing that is worth having a solid discussion with about life insurance, because it might be the way that you create generational wealth for your kids, that you protect them from the costs of probate and keep your properties safe, you protect your assets, and you may generate some wealth for yourself in the bargain and use it tax-free. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be great. And I think that this is also a topic, like you said, there's so many different areas of it and questions and probably different ways that you can do things. I think that a financial advisor would be great for this, for help.
Yeah, for sure. And you just want to find one who is really asking you those questions about your life, not just numbers like, well, what's it cost you to live? And what? Yeah, you really want somebody who will talk to you about you and try and find the right fit for you, not some cookie cutter plan. Yeah.
And I like the tip too about, you know, when they ask you ahead of time, what amount can you afford monthly, to kind of avoid that, because you're right. You might say you can afford 50, but you don't need how much insurance that's going to buy. They're still going to sell you the $50 amount, the highest amount that you want to do.
Yeah. The biggest problem with that question is it is like a car salesman, and car salesmen get a bad rap too. There's some great ones out there, I'm sure, but it is like that. When you say 50, they know you mean 100, you know, they're going to push you to 100, whatever. And you know what they're going to do with it. That's why you gave them $50. But what you can afford monthly has nothing to do with what you need. The trick is to figure out what you need and then fit it into your budget using a variety of the techniques that are available under the different types of life insurances we talked about. You might end up with two separate policies or a blended policy to make it work. You know, you might grow from one place to another and add on every year. I mean, there's so many things you could do, but it's important to get what you really need or want first and then make sure it's affordable for you by doing the other kinds of work that you do about budget and all that sort of stuff. Yep.
All right. Well, let's get your phone number in case anybody does have questions on this or any other financial matter.
Yes, absolutely. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jess.
We'll be back again next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, right here on WHMP.
Would you like to see your business on Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor? We offer a 15-year proven track record. We have limited openings, but are currently seeking sponsors and guests. Is your business a good fit? We'd like to start a conversation. Contact us today at 413-773-3333 or info@hugyourmoney.com.